The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, where the drought is officially over, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. How many shows have you started out with that? Every one of them lately, because it rains nearly every day.
Yes, that's true. Last year at this time, the corn in southern Illinois, where I travel on a daily basis, was barely knee high. Some of it didn't make it to knee height by September. It looked like it had been scorched with Marvin the Martian's heat ray.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff out there now, except for the parts of that are still sort of underwater, look really good. I mean, the fields that are well drained have corn that is standing shoulder high easily.
Mm-hmm.
And down around Cape Girardeau,
where I was a couple of weeks ago. Yours or mine?
Mine.
Or Sam's.
Well, it was that high by, you know, late May.
wasn't even planted by late May.
yeah, that's true. Well, actually, no, it was.
No,
it,
I think a lot of it was, actually.
It was getting close, though. I mean, they didn't get it in around April 1st, which is usually the target in central Illinois. But anyway.
You've learned so much about agriculture.
Really have.
Mom, listen to you, farmer boy.
So proud that I learned at the age of 50 what silage was. I blame her. She was born and raised in North Dakota, and she moved to Chicago before I was born. It's not my... You can't make silage from lawn clippings. And that's all the growing experience I had as a Ute.
Aww.
A Ute in Chicago. Well, welcome. It is July the 10th, Wednesday, and we endured some pretty heavy rains again today. In fact, I had to sit at a mini-mart in Maroa, Illinois, for almost an hour today waiting for rains to pass. It was so heavy, I literally couldn't see two car lengths ahead while I was driving down US 51.
Boy, when you send me texts like that, I start praying even harder. I pray for you all day long when you're out traveling around. But who is that? Is it somebody just walked by the window of our booth here? Call me crazy, but wasn't that former general, I guess he still is, retired general, Wesley C. Clark? What on earth is he doing here at the bunker?
Well, we've got an evergreen clip that you probably...
Oh, go get him. Okay, Wes, come on in. What is it you have to say?
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, no. He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, No. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
That was General Wesley Clark, and I'm still trying to...
Shut the door behind you, will you? And take that crowd with you.
Was it a little disturbing to you when they giggled when he said, I don't know why we're going to war with her?
Yes.
That was a little weird.
Yes, it was.
This was an interview on Democracy Now from March 2nd of 2007.
Well, that may explain why they were laughing.
Yeah, because clearly they were opposed to the war. The interesting thing would be to see how that audience would respond to criticism of Barack Obama's war in Afghanistan now. Afghanistan and Pakistan. Oh, yeah. And by the way, we also have troops on the ground.
I think they'd applaud.
Somalia and Sudan.
Oh, yeah. We want to be. You know, it doesn't matter which party put us in there. We shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
Shouldn't be playing around in other countries' backyards trying to enforce our will upon them. And did you just see the news today that Morsi is the head of the Muslim Brotherhood?
Yes, Mohammed Bah. Yeah. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. It's Badie. Bahti, Baddie. Are we the baddies? Mohammed Bah. He's the head of the
skulls on our caps,
which would make sense since the Muslim Brotherhood is essentially an outgrowth of the SS.
Exactly.
It is really weird what has transpired in Egypt over the last couple of years that we supported, you know, gosh, it's, you know, like you paraphrasing the quote from John Kerry, you know, we supported
him before we
deposed him. Yeah. The fellow who was the leader of Egypt before
Mubarak.
Yeah, I knew it was an M, but I couldn't think of it off the top.
Clearly, I had the portion of the brain who was using it at the time.
Thank you. Mubarak.
You're welcome.
We supported him before we deposed him. And the same is holding true now with Morsi. Morsi is out.
And he's become Lessi.
Yes. And the new prime minister just announced today, Wednesday, July 10th, is Hazem El Beblawi, who is identified or described rather as a technocrat, somebody who people hope will have a handle on the economic issues that have plagued Egypt since the Muslim Brotherhood came to power.
Mm-hmm.
The Muslim Brotherhood, and we talked about this on Monday, was, according to some outsiders, on the road to making Egypt a Middle Eastern version of North Korea. Very militant, very bristly, but extremely poor. The economy there has taken a hit. Tourism, which makes up, 17% of their economy, has basically dried up to nothing. I mean, who'd want to travel and see the Great Pyramids at Giza if there's a chance you're going to be caught in an uprising?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Not me. So anyway, El Babwi, former finance minister, has been named the new prime minister.
This is like a scene from Spinal Tap. They kept losing drummers.
What happened to this one? He choked on someone else's vomit. Let's see. Mohamed El Baradei had been in line to assume the post of prime minister, as we talked about on Monday, but his appointment to that post was torpedoed by the Salafist Nur Party. With Bablawi's appointment to the position, the military tapped a man who served as finance minister during the previous military transitional government and who has said that he knows exactly what it will take to cure Egypt's struggling economy. Well, I think I've got an idea about that, too. That would be the $6 billion that Kuwait has just promised and the $5 billion that the Saudis and Qatar are tossing in, or the UAE, rather, United Arab Emirates.
And we, of course, will not cut off aid because it wasn't really a coup.
That's the thing. The United States has some legal language in the agreement that we've signed with Egypt or something, some internal check and balance that says if Egypt's government is overthrown by a coup, we cut off foreign aid, military aid in particular. And so watching Jay Carney, the White House spokesman, dance around what to call this transition of government in Egypt has really been entertaining because he's coming up with every possible way to describe it except using the word coup. As well, it's not a coup. Well, what do you call it when the military arrests the president or prime minister and basically puts him under house arrest and puts in some other guy?
Bless his heart, Jay Carney can probably have a career later on playing himself on Saturday Night Live.
That's about right. So anyway, that's what's going on in Egypt. Now, there's an interesting interpretation of the events there, and I'm kind of sorry we missed this, but there's an incident that took place in Egypt that we kind of missed, kind of flew under the radar, and that is back in June of
this year, wasn't it? The NGO thing?
No. In 2011, during the Arab Spring Revolt, Egyptians detained 43 U.S. citizens and foreign nationals over their intervention in Egypt's
perceived interventions,
including among them the son of former U.S. Secretary of Transportation Ray LaHood, who's from Peoria, just up the road here, a couple hours. Sam LaHood is one of 16 Americans sentenced to jail in absentia by a court in Egypt, and this took place in June of this year. So just, you know, 6 weeks ago, he was tried, convicted, sentenced to 5 years in jail, and fined about $143. The NGOs that they represented, these 16 Americans, are the theory goes, are perhaps responsible for what's going on inside Egypt now, for basically strangling the economy and then leading to the downfall of the Muslim Brotherhood. The people who were tried and sentenced represent the International Republican Institute, the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs, the International Center for Journalists, but the also Freedom House. But the IRI and the NDI are basically organs of the two major political parties in the United States. We talked a few years ago about Russia, Putin kicking the NGOs out of Russia for interfering in their internal affairs. The Egyptians apparently tried to do something similar here, it seems. And is it possible, worth asking the question anyway, whether the NGOs with their, you know, these so-called spontaneous uprisings have actually gotten their revenge against the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, that's a really good question. And it has been taking place for years now, at least we're told about them now. It could be that it goes back decades. My guess is that these NGOs do go back decades, because you can't use front door diplomacy, so to speak, and you have to make changes in policy, foreign policy of other countries, through the backdoor policy. And very often that's an NGO, or sometimes even your diplomacy that you've got. You know, you'll have some second or third or whatever deputy ambassador, and he or she is making deals on the side. And then later on, if it doesn't work out, that person is simply dismissed and said, oh, they went rogue. But we've seen Soros back these color, you know, uprisings in various territories bordering on Russia. And that's one of the reasons Putin got pretty mad.
That's right. The Orange Revolution, the Rose Revolution. So anyway, something similar may be going on in Egypt. And that may be what we're seeing here. Of course, the Saudis have their own interests. Just throwing out another theory, something to consider, another theory for what might be going on in Egypt.
I think that's very, very possible. Nearby in Lebanon, France has decided to send aid in, you know, in the form of anti-missile tanks, if I remember it correctly. Let me find my little post here. France to provide Lebanese army with heavy weapons. French government decided to provide the Lebanese army with heavy weapons to boost its military performance. They're going to supply the Lebanese army with anti-tank missiles and sophisticated surface-to-air missiles. And they're sure that Hezbollah will never, ever get their hands on any of this equipment.
What could possibly go wrong with this situation?
Nothing at all. But nearby, I'm not done, in Turkey, a brand new advisor, chief advisor, mind you, has been made, appointed to Prime Minister Erdogan's cabinet. He is a conspiracy theorist. Yep, he is. And in fact, he says that he believes that someone has been trying to assassinate Erdogan using telekinesis.
Okay.
Psychokinetic powers.
Our brain, yeah, the brains have been.
And then we get back to that guy. I remember years ago, the guy who, Star Command, or it was supposedly another command for the military, and he was going to teach everybody use psychokinetic powers and
the First Earth Battalion.
Yes.
Yes.
Maybe the First Earth Battalion is real.
Colonel Jim Channon.
Yeah.
Major General Albert Stubblebein and the research that was taking place down
there.
The men who stare at goats.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I don't know. There are a lot of goats in Turkey.
And a lot of turkey and hamburger. And it all tastes like chicken.
Yum.
You know,
we'll have to check with our friend because he just got back from Turkey and find out what he
thinks.
Oh,
yes. Yes. Probably going to see him this week. He's got lots of pictures, he said.
Oh, good.
Gosh, what else to talk about? Some interesting things here. I got a good kicker with this story about the moon. We'll save that for the kicker, I think.
How about the military bases that we're building in Afghanistan have been for a couple of years, ever since the Obama push into Afghanistan? The U.S. military has been spending millions, mm-hmm. as much as $34, $35 million to build hulking big headquarters in southwestern Afghanistan that will never be used by the military. In fact, just yesterday, Obama said that he's going back to the idea that we should have a zero presence.
Mm.
Take everybody out. So these will be destroyed.
Yeah. And some of these bases are huge. Huge.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're still going to have some military presence, unless, of course, we replace the military with contractors, you know, Blackwater or Z or whatever it's calling itself mm-hmm. these days. We're not physically, we're not literally going to be out of Afghanistan altogether. We will, we'll be able to say mm-hmm. we don't actually have soldiers on the ground there. We just have guys carrying automatic weapons who are private contractors.
We should have asked General Clark about it before he left.
Yeah.
Because one two-star Army general who is not named is quoted as saying, "What the hell were they thinking?"
Yeah. I'm sure that, you know, most professional military men, those who serve because they believed that when they enlisted that they were defending freedom, that what they see from the politicians who guide the policies that direct their actions is utter insanity. Well, of course, that's nothing new. General Smedley Butler back in the 20s said war is a racket. Mm-hmm. And then he was pulled in and almost, if he had said yes, would have been part of a plot that overthrew Franklin Delano Roosevelt. There were some powerful business interests who recognized that General Butler was a hero, World War I hero, and wanted him to essentially lead a government takeover. And he refused to do it. We dare not call it coup, though, because that will mean we'll have to cut
No, we can't use that word.
This is a topic that you've done research on because it relates to, on the surface anyway, it seems to relate to genetics and the desire to control whose genes are passed along.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done research on the eugenics movement
mm-hmm.
and the connections to your alma mater, sadly, IU, David Starr Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, I think, if we were polled today, would say, well, you know, that was stuff that happened 100 years ago. Okay, maybe 50 years ago. Well, then you find out, well, North Carolina, they were sterilizing women without their knowledge into the 1970s.
Yeah.
It was happening as recently as 3 years ago in California. A report by the Center for Investigative Reporting have disclosed that, and I quote now, doctors under contract with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation sterilized nearly 150 female inmates from 2006 to 2010 without required state approvals. The Center for Investigative Reporting has found at least 148 women received tubal ligations in violation of prison rules during those 5 years, and there are perhaps 100 more dating back to the late 1990s, according to state documents and interviews. From 1997 to 2010, the state paid doctors over $147,000 to perform the procedure, according to a database of contracted medical services for state prisoners, et cetera. And so, anyway, this isn't getting a lot of play in the news, but it caught my eye because of the research that you'd been doing
mm-hmm.
and because of discussions we've had with others like, I'm only getting his first name, Andrew, and I can't think of his last name. Yeah, Eugenics Wars. I'll dig that up and put it in the show notes.
That's the great thing about recording this and not going live.
You can exactly.
Get that in there later and sound like you knew exactly what you were talking about.
I can go back and edit this. But according to the report.
Not Andrew Hoffman, no.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Andrew Hoffman, thank you. At one time, 33 states had programs that sterilized 65,000 Americans into the 1980s. Forced or coerced sterilizations aren't just things happening in the third world, not just a product of the 19th century and a misguided eugenics movement. These things are happening in the 21st century in America.
Well, I would argue that they're not only happening through intervention like that, surgical means, but I think that they're also happening through pharmacological means and through, honestly, you're going to call, okay, I'll get my tinfoil hat and I'll just strap it onto my head. I think chemtrails are real, and I think that those things that the aluminum, the nano-aluminum and the barium that are in chemtrails, they are very harmful to our neurological systems. They are, and they may even affect DNA. Hmm. So I just think that there are things happening now that are making us sterile.
And
look at the birth rate among developed nations. Tends to be really, really low.
Yeah,
so low that it's not a replacement value. You can't replace the people fast enough.
Yeah, and in the United States, in fact, just this year, we finally reached a point in which the number of newborns, of non-Caucasian newborns, is actually greater than those of Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big demographic shift that's taking place. Demographic? No, that's not the word I'm looking for. Maybe it is the word I'm looking for.
I think
for.
It is the word you're looking for. And it may be something that is actually desired. It's hard to say exactly. Mm-hmm. Those people. But I really believe that there are groups who sit down and, you know, and take a look at the rising population of the earth, and they're very concerned about this notion, mm-hmm, of Malthusian numbers, this point at which we can no longer feed everybody who's, mm-hmm, alive.
The earth overwhelms its carrying capacity.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a bunch of bull.
It is, right.
But those who believe it may be sincerely wrong, mm-hmm, but they're sincere. And I just have to believe some of those policies are having negative effects on you and me.
Well, there's some of that, and I also think that our culture, the Western culture, is so self-centered that adults don't want to interrupt their lifestyle for the burden of children.
No, I think that's true, too. And sadly, we're seeing not only a rise in abortion numbers, but we're, yeah, seeing a rise in infanticide numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once the child is born, the mother, in fact, there was a story today, the mother threw it off a 12-story building.
Hmm. Nothing new. In ancient Rome, they used to leave the babies out to die.
To either die
from
or be adopted. But
or to be picked up by slave traders.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That probably is what happened, yeah, if they lived through the animals that roamed the streets at night.
Sure. Yeah. Slave traders made a pretty good living by collecting babies and raising them up and selling them off into slavery.
What we can do to battle this is move to the moon.
Well, we could. We could.
And I think the moon could be a great place to be these days.
The way things are going here on planet Earth. Yeah.
I'm going to apply for a job up there.
Yeah. There's a bill in the United States House of Representatives pushing for an historic park, a national historic park, to be established on the surface of the moon. Why? To protect the artifacts that are there. According
to, yeah,
Representatives, mm-hmm, Donna Edwards of Maryland and Eddie Bernice Johnson of Texas, both Democrats, in their press release say, quote, "As commercial enterprises and foreign nations acquire the ability to land on the moon, it is necessary to protect the Apollo lunar landing sites for posterity." That's exactly right. We can't have those Ruskies up there collecting up our space junk and putting it on eBay.
Oh, they can't make it up there either. What are we worried about?
Well, that's the thing. It'll be interesting to see if this gets any traction. Somebody come, you know, call Representative Edwards. Somebody in a black suit with sunglasses has a quiet word with the representative. I withdraw my proposal. We shall see what happens there. Oh, and almost as funny, and this is just, I think, it's just as good a kicker. And it validates our theory that the reason we go left, right in our presidential elections these last four or five, presidential administrations,
cycles, yeah,
is to get stuff passed under a conservative or liberal president that would never get passed under the other administration.
Oh.
For example, we saw George W. Bush with the No Child Left Behind Act, you know, the expansion of the Department of Education, the Medicare drug entitlement programs that expanded that. Now, under the liberal President Obama, we see the NSA spying scandal coming to light. We see the president defending his right to use predator drones to kill American citizens without any kind of oversight, you know, essentially be able to publish a hit list. And now it's come out that President Obama is ordering federal employees to spy on each other. They are so disgusted by the leaks that have come out that somebody has leaked the information that the administration is actually asking people in the federal bureaucracy to watch their coworkers for changes in behavior, people at high risk, people who you know, could be undergoing a change in their marriage situation, or people who don't look like they're sleeping correctly, or people with strange internet surfing habits.
And then you ask them, do you have a gun at home?
Yeah.
There was an article today saying that doctors should ask older people if they have guns at home, because older people, especially older men, tend to be at risk for suicide. So if your coworker starts to look, you know, sort of weird, you got to, by the way, do you have a gun at home? Is it secured in a cabinet? Do you keep the ammunition safely stored away from the weapon? Because if you don't,
you
know what
risk
can happen.
Yeah, kablooey.
Just saying.
Yeah, and then you get a knock on your door and you've got guys in dark suits with dark glasses out there waiting to take you
or
away.
Or it's General Clark and he's shown up with his entire posse again.
To tell you all
in which
about
case they're on horses
the road
and they're
to
a real posse.
You know, I didn't like Wesley Clark when he was running for president, but and I'm not, based on what I read of his tactical, or rather strategic decision-making back during the Kosovo conflict, you know, thought that he was not as bright as some of his supporters thought he was. But if what he says is true about the decision to go after Syria, Sudan, you know, and Iraq, Somalia, and Libya, and then Iran, ultimately, you know, the plan, okay, it didn't take place in 5 years, but it is still proceeding apace, and it would appear that Syria is the next domino they want to fall. So we'll bring out that clip every now and again just to remind you that this has been
known.
What
do you mean clip?
We'll bring
General
Clark.
Oh, the one you recorded.
We'll bring General Clark back. I broke the third wall.
Honey, yeah. You gave it away. They were buying it, I tell you.
Wake up, you're blowing it. Football? What's a football?
Oh, that's enough.
Oh, well. Anyway, we will be back on Friday as we continue with our
three times a week.
Yes, and until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody. General Clark, come here!
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.